Plus 49.
Hello and bienvenidos to Plus 49. My name is Sigrid Arteaga, and this week we bring you Dima from Mitte Daily with their own words, hottest spots, hidden gems, and untold stories of Berlin's finest borough and beyond. Let's start first with our highlights of the week. Germany is at a crossroads with its new Skilled Immigration Act, designed to attract more qualified workers from non-EU countries. However, the process is seen as overly complex, prompting calls for a new welcoming culture. Economic leaders have expressed concerns, particularly regarding the growing influence of the AfD party. The new Opportunity Card, introduced on June the 1st, has yet to significantly impact the number of labor migrants. To date, only 200 visas have been issued under this new regulation. The card requires a state-recognized vocational qualification or degree, along with language skills in German or English. Points are awarded based on language proficiency, work experience, age, and connection to Germany. Those with enough points can move to Germany and have a year to secure a job, with a possible two-year extension under the certain conditions. Peter Adrian, president of the German Chamber of Commerce and Industry, DIHK, has criticized the system, stating, "The opportunity card requirements are too complex. I doubt this will attract many skilled workers." Adrian also calls for a different welcoming culture. Adrian also calls for a different welcoming culture, emphasizing the need for improvements in visa processing, housing, and childcare provision. "We need to send a clear message. We are excited to welcome you to Germany." The complexity of obtaining a visa also affects how many non-EU citizens come to work in Germany. The Foreign Office has stated that visas for skilled workers are prioritized and aims to fully digitize the national visa processes by January 1, 2025. A recent economic survey by the DIHK reveals that over half of companies see the skill shortage as a business risk, alongside high energy and raw material costs and weak domestic demand. There's also growing concern over the rising poll numbers of the AfD party. Industry President Siegfried Rusvum stresses the need for improvement in implementing the Skilled Immigration Act, emphasizing the importance of a welcoming culture from embassies to local foreign authorities, reminiscent of the American "We Want You" slogan. It is Sunday evening in Germany, and the clock let us know that it's less than 15 minutes before Tatort starts. But first, the Tagesschau. The broadcast has been delivering news with integrity and clarity since 1952, and its straightforward reporting style remains deeply respected and trusted. Even today, in the age of digital media, the 8 p.m. Tagesschau draw millions of viewers who value its professionality. So, what makes the Tagesschau so special? It's not just about staying informed. It's about tradition and trust. Germans appreciate the concise and unbiased reporting, free from scandal. This program represents the high standards and credibility that Germans expect from their news sources. But Germans don't stop at television. They have a well-rounded approach to news consumption. Major newspapers such as the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, Süddeutsche Zeitung, und Die Zeit are among the favorite for those who enjoy in-depth analysis and comprehensive coverage. Public broadcasters like ARD and ZDF also play a critical role providing news that both reliable and accessible. Overall, Germans tend to read more newspapers than many other Western countries, often engaging with multiple publications to obtain diverse perspectives. This behavior reflects a broader cultural emphasis on staying well-informed and critical engaging with news media. While digital media is increasingly popular, the tradition of reading newspaper remains strong in Germany. Trust in media is something Germans hold very dearly. Compared to many other countries, trust levels in Germany media are relatively high. This is largely due to the emphasis on public broadcasting and the strict standards of journalism that guide reporting here. Transparency and accountability are key, influencing the preference for traditional, credible media outlets over unverified online sources. If you want to try out your German, take a look at Tagesschau in einfache Sprache. Distributed by public broadcaster ARD, Tagesschau in einfache Sprache covers the same news stories as the main daily program, but is presented by slow-speaking newsreader using simplified vocabulary and with more clarification about complex topics, terms, or context. And after watching it, you can move on to Tatort as your Sunday activity. Let's continue with the topic news, but now from the perspective of Mitte Daily in our interview section. We're going to be talking right now with Dima Samarin. He's the founder for Mitte Daily. Welcome.
Hi, Sigrid. It's a good day. The sun is shining on Torstrasse, so I'm happy to be here.
That sounds lovely to have you here. And I would love to know, how did you arrive in Berlin?
You know, I never really had Berlin on my map at all. But when I was like 18, my friend went here for a vacation. And she was like, you know what? I had this pair of white sneakers and I wore them for the whole day out in Berlin. And they still kept, you know, remained white. I was like, huh? And she's like, oh my God, you should totally visit. And that was all she said. And that was literally all I needed. So I thought, hey, you know what? That sounds like a good enough reason to visit the city. So I did. And it was the most bizarre experience. I don't know. I didn't get it at first, which I think is an experience many people share. When you just arrive, you're like, huh, what's that all about? But still, by the time I was leaving this a 1 or 2 week getaway it was, I already had the tickets back. And then I kept coming back. And now it's my home base for the last 6 or 7 years.
So what is Mitte Daily and how did it start it?
What isn't Mitte Daily? Mitte Daily is my labor of love. You know, to quote Oprah, it's not quote Oprah, but sort of quote Oprah. It's the child I never had. It's the friend that everybody wants. It's the media outlet that nobody deserves. No, but in reality, it's a platform that I started where I share, you know, kind of the latest and the greatest, perhaps the hottest of what's happening in my neighborhood in Mitte, but also beyond that. And we have an Instagram channel. I'm also now working on starting a newsletter, a website, all of those things. But for now, if you're listening, check us out at Mitte Daily on Insta. That's where all of the action happens.
And how did it start it?
You know, it was, I wish I could tell you like this grand story of how it came to me in a dream, but in reality, it was one of the COVID projects. And I think, I mean, beyond all of the horrors that were associated with just dealing with this unknown diseases, I think there's a certain level of embarrassment when it comes to the COVID times. We don't really talk about it that much because, I mean, we all sort of like, we behave in a bizarre way, you know, Zoom dance parties and all. But for me, I decided to add an extra level of embarrassment and launch and just put myself out there and start this project because quite honestly, I was itching to do something with my energy. You know, you're on lockdown. You don't really have much outlet. And at the time, I also had to switch from kind of doing freelance events and parties and all of that to a regular remote desk job. And I needed to channel my energy somewhere. And I've been sitting on this idea for quite some time. And I thought, hey, if not now, then when, really? And that's how it came to be. I mean, I've been keeping it going for a few years now. I dropped the ball for a couple of years. But at the beginning of 2024, I picked it back up because I thought, hey, I had a good thing going. So now we're back full force. And I can't wait to see where it will go next.
Let's talk about Mitte. If you could describe Mitte, how would you describe it?
You know, I think Mitte is much like Hollywood. It's not a place. It's like an idea in my mind, which I like playing with that narrative. Because in theory, every city has a Mitte, every city has a middle, right? The center where supposedly it all kind of brews and it all happens. But I mean, there is also quite a big stigma around it. Like, oh my God, Mitte is, there's a certain kind of stereotype. So Mitte is just, yeah, to me, it's an idea. And I don't think anybody knows what it really is. It's just, you just have to experience it.
Well, that is actually one of your jobs, to try to inspire more people to come to Mitte and experience it, not only as a tourist, but also, you know, as come to live to Mitte.
For sure. I mean, I don't see it as my job per se. I'm not recruiting people to come to Mitte. But I mean, if we enjoy it, I think what I find interesting is oftentimes when you think about Mitte, you think of, ooh, the Brandenburg Gate, or, ooh, you know, Pergamon Museum. There is this kind of very touristic shell around it, which is cool, and it's there, and it's amazing. I love Bode Museum. I love all of those things. Walking around, it's gorgeous. Obviously, the architectural legacy is amazing. Also, Mitte, I think, is the number one area in which they film all the films in Berlin. So, like, it's like this historical backdrop, right? Which is nice and all, but I think there is more to it. There is so many like small, tiny places which, I mean, if you don't know about them, you probably wouldn't stumble upon them. But that's what I love about it. I just love just walking around and discovering those things. And just kind of, Mitte Daily allows me to just fuel this curiosity and stay in touch with my immediate surroundings, because it's so easy to get lost in all of this shuffle. But I hope that answers your question.
Yes, definitely. Do you have a favorite spot?
Do I have a favorite spot? I have a few. I love, this is not technically Mitte, but Pasternak restaurant. Oh my God, has my soul. It's the best Eastern cuisine you'll ever try. Yeah, another place I really, really love is Chen Che. It's this Vietnamese tea house where, again, if you don't know it's there, you probably wouldn't stumble upon it, but they have this, like, you enter and it's this gorgeous garden and hydrangeas and fish ponds, and they serve tea and they serve all of the Vietnamese fabulousness you can imagine. So, you know, if you're having a first date or just to catch up with friends, it's perfection. It's perfection. It's really calm. It's really nice. The service is great. So do check it out.
I should find someone who I have a first date with, and then I will definitely go there.
Well, listen, maybe you could just go there by yourself and pick up somebody. Why not? It's a very calm, it's a very peaceful environment. Maybe it will inspire some nice connections. Who knows?
That's a great idea. Dima, we have been talking about a lot of different stories of Mitte. And one of the greatest things about interviewing expats is this feeling of becoming a Berliner. Under your opinion, what is kind of like the moment where you can say, I'm a Berliner, or what is a Berliner?
That's a really good question. First, I mean, if you start with the definition of Berliner, to me, every Berliner, meaning a person who was born and raised here that I've met, it's not like this extravagant freak that you like people who live outside of Berlin might picture. It's normally the most level-headed person who kind of gives the impression of, oh, I've seen it all, you will not surprise me. And they don't need to like prove anything. They're just there and they're just, you know, ready to roll, which I love, which I aspire to be, which I don't think I'm there or I will ever be there, to be honest. Which reminds me, I did an interview with Cookie from Cookie Cream Berlin, who is this kind of, you know, some legendary figure in the local scene and this kind of party organizer. And he has a few restaurants here in Mitte. And he moved to Berlin in like the 90s, I think, when he was 17. And he's been here ever since. And I asked him, so, you know, you're such a staple in the Berlin nightlife, in the Berlin gastro scene. Do you consider yourself a Berliner? He said, oh, no, not at all. My wife was born in Berlin. She's a Berliner. My kids were born in Berlin. They're Berliners. I've been here for almost 3 decades. I still don't think I qualify, which I was like, you know what? Maybe that's it. Maybe you don't become a Berliner. Maybe it's just something you're born with. I don't know. I think everybody has to answer this question to themselves. If you feel like associating yourself with this place, why not go for it? I don't think to embrace the Berlin spirit, you know, if you want to go for it, just go for it. I don't think anybody would mind, really.
One of the things about Berlin is it is that it's constantly changing. And I think maybe this is also kind of part of it. You're really not 100% a Berliner, but somehow you're a Berliner, but you're also constantly changing.
For sure. I remember this quote. I don't remember. It was some writer, I believe, who said, Paris is always Paris, Berlin is never Berlin, which is hard to explain, but somehow it rings so true, for me, at least in my experience. I mean, of course, there is a big historical aspect to it. The city has, in fact, undergone so many eras and stages and changes, and it was divided. And, you know, we know the tale. Yeah, it's hard to grasp. It feels like there's always construction. It feels like there's always something new happening. And this area is suddenly cool, and this place suddenly shut down. And you kind of have this, like you're running on a treadmill trying to keep up with everything. I was talking to this guy actually at the last Pitang picnic that we hosted at Gipstrijk with Mitte Daily. He was like, yeah, you know, I've been living in Zionskirchplatz, which, if you don't know, it's, if I had, you know, an option to choose one single place to live in Berlin, I would live right there. It's just this perfect kind of Platz, you know, it's amazing. And he was like, yeah, you know, I've been living there for 20 years or so, and I don't feel bored with it. I feel fine, because even though my apartment stays the same, the city around it changes so much that there's always the novelty factor. It just doesn't go away. And I think that's very curious. And I think that's very true to Berlin.
Yeah, definitely. It is kind of a love poem to the city, because it's part of, part of living in Germany and living in Berlin. It's very different. I mean, the cities are very different. And my last question would be about your recommendations to surviving Berlin.
You know, I don't think I would be very original in saying that Berlin can really swallow you up. And I experienced it very much firsthand, which is why I actually had to take a break in Berlin fashion, mental health reasons, from actually doing Mitte Daily for a couple of years. I think it can swallow you up, and it's kind of, you know, it's scary. So I think my number one tip, if I can give one, would just to kind of stay proactive to a degree, and which is, you know, I chose to do it through like starting this platform and kind of, which gives me an excuse really to reach out to people, to host things, to kind of fuel my curiosity about what's happening around me. Especially, you know, the global news cycle is very scary these days. It's intimidating. And it just feels like, damn, all of those things happen. You know, what, like, your life just feels so small and meaningless suddenly. But also, you know, it's just this Berlin environment. I think it can kind of close in on you a little bit. It's like, you know, it's no mistake that people call it, you know, the loneliness capital, of a lonely city, the gray city. You do feel lonely from time to time. More than half of Berliners don't have partners. You know, everybody lives by themselves in their small WGs or whatever. So I think my key to kind of surviving this environment was just to kind of say yes to things and to stay curious and stay connected to my immediate surroundings. Just see, you know, something open, see what's up. You know, somebody invited you somewhere. Last night, my friend messaged me at 9 p.m. Hey, impromptu karaoke birthday party. Be there at 11. Bring a cake. I said, say no more. I couldn't find a cake. I went to Edeka. I brought some donuts and some candles. And we went to this karaoke. And maybe that's why my voice might sound a bit raspy today. Just, you know, locked ourselves in the room and sang Spice Girls until 2 a.m. I think, and, you know, it was the best time. And I think, you know, you have to just like say yes to me, and you have to keep engaging, I think, because otherwise the walls will close down, at least in my experience.
Yeah, I do. I mean, there is this German saying that said, die Decke auf dem Kopf fallen, or something like that. And it's exactly like that. Once you start being at your house, and then eventually you feel like the ceiling is coming on top of you, you need to go out. And of course, doing this by any of the opportunities that the city gives you, I think it's amazing.
For sure. And especially, you know, with the remote work situation, which so many people, but especially expats, I feel, find themselves in. It's very easy to just stay in the bubble of one. You're literally in your own company the whole time, because, you know, even if you're having online calls, to me, it doesn't count. It doesn't feel like, you don't have the same endorphins releasing in your brain. I'm not a scientist, but hey. So yeah, you just have to get out there.
You need to hug people.
Yeah, well, you.
I am not laughing.
Oh, yes, that's, I guess, a very kind of, you know, embracing culture, which I love, which I think Berlin could use more of. You know what? This reminds me of the film Lobster. Have you seen it?
No.
It's like this utopic society where It's based on the fact that everybody has to be coupled up. So if you want to survive in the society, you have to find a partner or they'll kill you or something. I don't remember the details. But
that's something like in Latin America, soap opera.
Yeah, yeah, it was...
That actually happens in reality. If you're not married by 30, you're still out of society.
I mean, I'm sure it has roots in reality for sure, but it's kind of like very much dramatized. But then there is this underground society who like with the people who live in the wilderness and like just like hide away from those couples. And my favorite scene from the movie is the leader of this like underground single society. He's like, we dance by ourselves. That's why we listen to techno. And then it just cuts to the scene of like a bunch of people raving in the forest, earphones in, just like in complete silence because they're trying to hide, obviously, and they're just dancing by themselves. And I thought, damn, this is Berlin. This is perfectly encapsulated. So you have to have some sort of antidote to this, or not antidote, rather. I mean, it's great to have those solitude spaces, right, where you can just express yourself, be in your own company. But... you know, don't be afraid to just speak to strangers or, you know, maybe take up community gardening. I don't know, do something.
This is the last part with you, dear Dilma from Mitte Daily. And for this, do you have a favorite story or interview of those that you have featured in Instagram?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've just doing Mitte Daily allows me to just reach out to people you normally wouldn't reach out to and just kind of fuel this curiosity, because you wouldn't just message a guy, hey, I'm interested in your story, you know, would you like to tell me about it? But here I have some sort of excuse. Hey, would you like to do an interview? And one of the fascinating characters that I got the pleasure to speak to was Sven, the owner of Biblioteca Culinaria, which is this vintage cookbook store. The interview I did was titled Inside the Most Niche Bookstore in Berlin. And I do think it is. And Sven is such a character. He's been collecting vintage cookbooks specifically for decades at this point. And he had so many of them that he thought, hey, I might as well start a shop. And now he's just hanging out there. He started this shop in the basement of his own building in Mitte, which also is just, I don't know how he made it happen, but you just enter and it's this whole other world. It's like a time capsule. And he has some of them are like 17th century handwritten. Some of them are like mid-century, you know, German, American, Japanese, Brazilian, all cuisines of the world, all languages. And he's just, yeah, it's just so fascinating. And so Berlin, I think, just picking out something, picking out a thing. I like when people commit to the bit. And I think Sven does it beautifully. So shout out to Sven.
Dilma, you're basically also doing, at this point, events. When is the next event? What happens in this event?
Yeah, I just started because I just like to bring people together around something that does not involve phones, hopefully. And I just wanted to have some sort of, you know, it's good to scroll on your phone and all, but and see, you know, those Instagram posts. But I think the magic is really when you meet face to face. And this summer I started doing our first event. The first one was called Pitank Picnic. So we just got together at Gipsdrake to play Pitank. Nobody really knew how to play. We figured it out and it was gorgeous. The first event was just like 20 people. I mean, not much, but it was lovely. And then everybody was like, oh, so when's the next one? So I did the second one and that took place last weekend, I think. And it was suddenly 100 people showed up. And I was like, wow, the word of mouth is really strong. It's not a myth. Yeah, and we just played Pitang. We had some live music from our friends Sam and Karina. We had some cakes provided by Mandarin Coffee Roastery. And it was just lovely. And everybody was like, oh, now it's a monthly thing, huh? And I'm like, I guess it is. Yeah, so we're doing another Pitang picnic, the last one of the season. Happy to announce. Exclusive announcement, everybody. Mark your calendars. It's August 31, 4 p.m., Saturday, Gipsdrake. Bring your snacks, bring your friends. I'll see you there.
We'll see each other there, definitely. Thank you so much for the interview, but also for the invitation. Let's wrap it up, sadly, but hopefully we'll be able to talk to each other in a couple of weeks to go and you can tell us what else is coming for Mitte Daily.
Absolutely. I would love nothing more. Thank you, Sigrid. It's been a delight.
Plus 49. Ask a German.
Hi, my name is Dima from Mitte Daily, and I just have one question for the Germans. What's up with Abendbrot? What? Why? I don't quite get it. Just like a cold plate of things that you just, why not have a dinner? Or like have like a nice aperitivo? Like, it's kind of this gray zone in between, which I can't quite grasp. So I'd love to know the history behind it.
Well, to be quite fair, when I was younger, I didn't understand the appeal of Abendbrot either, as it technically only consists of bread, cold cuts, cheese, and various breads, which I found rather boring at the time. However, as I got older, my perspective shifted significantly. It is precisely this simplicity that defines the food and makes it something truly special. Of course, Abendbrot's biggest appeal is that it is prepared very quickly, especially because you don't need to use the stove or oven. This makes it an ideal choice for busy weeknights when time is limited or when you just don't have the energy to prepare a full-cooked dinner after working the whole day. With just a few simple ingredients, you can create a satisfying meal in minutes. Another advantage of Abendbrot is the nearly limitless variety it offers. Each person can customize their plate according to their own tastes and preferences. Whether you prefer a classic combination of ham and cheese, or want to experiment with different spreads like hummus or avocado, there are endless possibilities. This adaptability extends to dietary needs as well. Whether you're vegetarian, vegan, or a meat lover, Abendbrot can easily accommodate everyone's choices. But what truly sets Abendbrot apart is not just the food itself. It's the atmosphere it creates and the opportunity for social interaction. Typically enjoyed in a casual setting with family and friends, this meal fosters a relaxed dining experience that encourages conversation and connection among those gathered around the table. The act of sharing food becomes an occasion for storytelling and laughter. Now that I'm older, I can definitely appreciate why Abendbrot is such a beloved tradition here in Germany. It is not only quick to prepare, but also provides an array of options and creates wonderful moments with family and friends. More importantly, it brings people together, creating moments filled with joy and connection that are often more meaningful than any elaborate meal could provide. In essence, Abendbrot embodies the spirit of togetherness and simplicity that resonates deeply within German culture.
And that's a wrap for today's episode here at Plus 49. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being a part of this project. And of course, thank you, Marlene and Egon, for your support during this project. My name is Sigrid Arteaga, and hasta la próxima.